Hi, I'm Kyle, and on episode 465 of the MWA podcast, Sean, Brian, and myself are asking Jamil Abrahams the five questions. And if you haven't already, be sure to check out Jamil's interview on episode 464. So welcome back to the show, Jamil.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Welcome. Not a problem. So before we get started with the five questions, do we have a Patreon shout out for this episode?
We sure do. You know, we always like to give a big shout out to our Patreon supporters. Today, we're giving that shout out to Buzz Buskirk. I love that name.
That is the best Patreon name we have.
Yes, so that far. Is the best one.
And listener, if you're not a supporter, you can create a better name that we can talk about. But if you would like to support the MWA podcast, go to patreon.com/MWA podcast.
Well, I know Buzz isn't his given name, but Buzz Kirk is.
Anybody named Buzz, I don't know if is that a extension of Brian or Bob or some other B name or Buzz Aldrin. I don't know what his actual first name is.
If your last name's Buzz Kirk,
you gotta go Buzz. Yeah.
You gotta go Buzz.
Yeah. That's like my long, well, not long, my Polish last name. I had people call me Wiz or Whiskey or, you know, all sorts of manners of shortening things that aren't the all four syllables. So So anyway, that aside, Jamil, going into the five questions, slightly edited because we kind of asked you one in the previous episode. So like our script is a little flipped, but what is your favorite tool?
My favorite tool kind of bounces between two tools, actually.
That's fine. We just have to keep it under 25. Go on.
Yes.
Okay. We'll just do two then.
Okay.
For many years, my favorite tool was a Bailey 5.5.
Oh.
It was the earlier 5.5 that had the narrower blade, the 2.25.
The 2.25.
Yeah. So I had that. I bought that plane from Patrick Leach, who I've been buying tools from since I was like 20 years old.
Yeah. I get his emails every month and I look at them and I resist as much as I can.
sorry to age you, Patrick, but I had that tool. I fettled it, you know, tuned it up. I had it actually had the sole surface ground. And then I got a replacement iron from.
I was gonna say
Nielsen.
Yep. Did you replace the blade? Yep.
And a chip breaker, and they were kind enough to take one of their wider ones, the 2.5, I think, and grind it down to 2.25 because it wasn't available. So
okay, nice.
I'm not promising they still do that. They probably don't. But it. They did it for me for whatever reason. I don't know. Maybe it was a huge bribe I sent Denup or Tom. But that tool, for some reason, just it cuts like perfectly all the time.
Is that a 45 degree frog?
Yeah, it's just okay. And I don't have any back bevels or anything to increase cutting.
Yeah,
I just hone it at pretty much hone everything at 30 degrees, and I don't think much about it. But that tool, for some reason, has just performed perfectly and beautifully for so many years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the tool, the plane I reach for like 90% of my work.
It's a nice upgrade. I have a number 6 that does not have a new blade on it. I've got the original, you know, and so I've done whatever it can do to get that thing sharp, but I know it's not optimal. Getting a nice, new, thick, modern tool steel blade. Definitely upgrades those old tools for sure.
Yeah, they make a huge difference. And all my old Bailey planes or Bedrocks have upgraded tools in it, or steel in it, either from Lee Nielsen or Hawk.
Yep.
Or Veritas or whatever. But
so
that's my favorite tool alongside an infill plane that I have from Sauer and Steiner.
Oh boy.
They're coming to Handworks, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one booth I have to stay away from.
No,
that's where my wallet will be in the
don't
car.
Stay away. don't stay away from it.
I've used those planes at shows and they are absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
My wife would, I don't know what she would do to me.
Well, I ordered one a few years ago. I actually ordered it with my brother. We kind of went in on it together. And they're not inexpensive. They're they're all one of a kind, made by very special, you know, artists and craftsmen. And for me, it was as much about owning something that was made to that level as it was owning it for its function.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used, Conrad's a friend of mine, and I've used his planes for a very long time. I've known him for, I think, like 15 years or more. And his planes are just phenomenal. And I wanted one, so I ordered one. And it kind of shares, you know, the favorite position with that 5.5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same plane form factor wise. It's 50, I think it's either 47 or 50 degree cutting angle, bed angle. But it's basically the same length, same width, kind of a panel plane size. So yeah, that's the favorite tool.
Oh, that's very nice. I know the that's the thing with, I mean, coming to Handworks, you're going to see all of these quote unquote boutique tool makers, but getting your hands on them will kind of inform why they are what they are. Like, I totally respect what Conrad does and what Ron Breeze does and those things. Like, those boutique planes are absolutely phenomenal.
You know, the cool part for me is that, you know, Ron and Conrad and Rainey you know, these guys that are making these info planes, they're furniture makers. They're not just tool makers.
Right.
They're furniture makers, and the tools really came out of their woodworking,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, speaks a lot as to the reason why they work so well.
Yeah. Well, I know Conrad's into the vintage cars too, so too bad he wrenches on his own stuff, because you might be able to make some trades there.
Well, happened or not happened in the past.
Shall not divulge. All right, Jamil, our second question is, who has influenced you the most?
That's a hard question. That's a tough question.
I guess if we can focus it on woodworking, and I guess that's luthiery and other things, like, you've got a lot of inspirations in your life, obviously.
Yeah. I mentioned in the podcast, I mentioned Chris Schwarz. There's just something about the way that he builds and his enthusiasm, that speaks to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say that our aesthetic is necessarily, you know, lockstep, but it's more about his ethos that influences me and has a lot in the past few years.
I agree with that. I like the ethos comment. Yeah. His writing, his way, his ethics, all of those things just play into who Chris Schwarz is and what he represents.
Mm-hmm. Yes, his ethics especially is impeccable in my view. Yep. And to me, that carries a lot of weight with the work that he produces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think so. When he had the Rubo books at the WIA in North Carolina. That was in Kentucky. And seeing him in the space of those, getting to look at those themselves, knowing that he had procured those, and his passion for what it is and the way he writes, it's just fantastic. You know, no matter, you're going to be entertained and inspired all at the same time when Chris is around, I think.
There's a funny story behind those books.
Oh, really?
Kind of an embarrassing story. I don't, I think he'd be fine with me telling the story, but I got a call years and years ago from a guy, or his email or something. And he says, I've got a set of first edition calfskin binding Rubos that I'm trying to find a home for. And I had just bought a set of the reprint from Philip LaFargue, I think his name was. This was like in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
They had reprinted them. Same sort of volume, you know, three very thick books.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought those. But those were, I mean, they were pricey, but they were, you know, a first edition. And for some reason, I don't know, maybe I was distracted that day, or I was drinking too much. I says, no, I don't really care about having calfskin binding. I like these books because of their content, not because of
The history,
The collector aspect. And
right.
It didn't dawn on me that this guy was offering me original first edition Rubeaux.
Yeah, like Rubeaux probably breathed on these things, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I says, nah, I'm gonna pass. And I get a call maybe the next day or that afternoon, or a text, or I don't remember if it was a call, but anyway, Chris contacts me and he says, you'll never believe what I just bought. When he said that, it hit me. I'm like, oh my God, what did I just pass up?
Yeah. I've got seconds. You had the first option.
I did.
Yeah. You could be holding this over his head to this day.
Yeah.
It's funny because what had happened, like that same moment, I thought it was meant to be that I passed on those.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
It was, they're a way better. It's way better that he ended up with them than me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, I've been to this place. And, you know, he will bring those books out and say, hey, here, look at them, you know, and da 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 da. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and you start looking into the how fine the transfer of the woodcuts or whatever they did. The
engravings, yeah.
The engravings are. Yeah, they were copper engravings. But, yeah, you look at how fine the detail is on that stuff. It's just, like, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Was that 2015, 2016 WIA that he had those?
Mm-hmm.
It had to be. And yeah. I have like the little pamphlet reprint of some of the images on those plates. And I still hang that in my office. you know, like it's just fun to look at because it's like so detailed. They're fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, Rubeaux himself did all the engraving too. He didn't just write
the text. That's what I heard. Which is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, a true Renaissance man.
Yes,
I mean,
so yeah,
in the right time.
This is the most influential. Yeah, definitely in recent years, for sure.
Mm. For sure.
Yeah,
another attendee of Handworks, obviously. I think
yes, they'll have a booth.
Wouldn't be without it.
Yep.
Absolutely. Awesome. So, next question: what is your woodworking white whale? That is to say, what is the one thing you haven't made but you always wanted to?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. that's a tough one. I built an anarchist tool chest. I think 3 years ago. It's not finished. I have a set of hardware from Seth Gould that
mm-hmm.
commissioned to have him make
nice
for that chest. That I still haven't installed, and it's still in the white. I haven't painted it. I haven't. The lid that's on it is a temporary lid, but what I want to do is I want to make a lid for that where I sort of use all of the skills that I've learned over the years to make kind of an over the top marquetry inlay, you know, fretwork, bone, ivory, exotic rosewoods, sort of inlaid tool chest lid. And it's a white whale in the sense that it's a very time consuming thing. And I think we all struggle to find time to do stuff like that. So that's what I'd like to do, you know, at some point.
You just got to put a deadline, like next, the next Handworks after
this. Yeah. Bring it to Handworks. That's a good deadline.
I have a bedside table in the style of Garrett Hack that I started for my niece about 7 years ago, and it's still in pieces. So I have to finish that before I do the tool chest.
Though. I have a blanket chest that I made for my niece and nephew. I believe my nephew will be in eighth grade next year, and he still doesn't have it. So yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't see a lot of people doing like these fancy inlaid tool chest lids like you'd see in some of these old tool chests, you know. It's like mm-hmm. that was like what the cabinet maker used to show off his chops.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody's really doing them much, so it'd be fun to do it.
Yeah, it'd be fun to do it. You'll start a trend, you know. Things come in phases,
I hope so.
You know, right. Waves,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
Put it on TikTok.
So what has been your biggest stumbling block in woodworking?
I would say just finding time to explore new techniques, I think. But I'll be 50 in January, and I would say the thing that is the biggest stumbling block are my eyes more than anything.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm like doing this all the, you know, lifting my glasses up, and I have trifocals now and progressives, and I've got the Optivisor, and it's not fun trying to just see lines on a rule or a layout line or a saw curve or,
yeah,
that's probably,
yeah. Well, let me say it doesn't get any better. Yeah. But I went straight, I can't do progressives. I went straight to just bifocals. I don't have the trifocals yet, but I just did the bifocals, and I got the bifocal safety glasses.
Yes, I have those too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, big thumbs up on those. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, I think, you can find them fairly inexpensive. 3M makes some that are like, and there's a number of companies that make some, but you can get them for like 15, 20 bucks.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but
my eyes were going south when I was at my dental hygienist last, and she's got these things that are like,
the loop. Yes. Yeah. I had a pair of those too.
Her, you know, on the chair, and I'm like, where do you get those at?
Yeah, there are companies on Amazon that make them. You know, there's medical grade and there's not medical grade. But you know, you kind of put your thumbs out to the focal distance that you would normally be working. Okay. And then that you actually measure that distance, and then you figure out what magnification you need and loops, but they work fantastic.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They look amazing when she's using them. So
yeah.
I mean, she let me try them on. I'm like, okay, yeah, I need some of those.
Yeah. And you just keep adding more light into your shot.
Yeah. Light's big, because that's what I found. Like low light, I'm a squint fest. Like I can't see crap. I've worn glasses since I was 6 years old, you know, and last time I got examined, it was like, you know, you're right on the edge of bifocals. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I can deal, but
Kyle can sell you a dental lamp.
yeah. I have a dental lamp.
He's using it. Oh, I saw my
that.
Own.
Yeah. That's the other thing I want. I'm always looking at that light and thinking that'd be great over the bench.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
I've not pulled the trigger on a magnifying, like a modern LED style of that, which is like the magnifying lens inside a ring of LED lights.
Oh, I have one of those for my
with an articulating station. Light. Yeah.
Interesting. All right, Jamil. So our last question is: how has the internet influenced your work?
Oh, how has the internet influenced my work? Being inspired, I think, by seeing other people's work. Not so much for technique, but for design, I would say, and style. So I would say I don't use a lot of social media. My Instagram following is based, I mean, not people that follow me, but what I follow is like probably 30% car stuff and then 60% furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So I just really enjoy seeing what people are making and new things that are, you know, coming down the pike. There's a couple accounts that kind of stand out right now, and one is Bibbings and Hemsby. They're out of England, and they're doing a lot of stuff with like riven oak and cut nails, like cabinetry that you wouldn't kind of, you know, it's kind of a unique style, and that really appeals to me. I love quarter sawn white oak. And then there's another duo that goes by the name Sciosi Design, Ivy Sciosi, and they do a lot of walnut slab tables, and they do this very interesting inlay. So instead of using like bow ties like Nakashima used, they use just like squares, and it almost looks kind of like a pixelated, kind of a digital camo kind of thing. It's not super complicated stuff, but it's just unique to me and interesting. And then chair makers, of course.
The Bibbingsy and Hensby, however you pronounce that, they do a lot of chairs too.
And yes, they have some unique I like their designs. Chairs. Yeah,
Yeah, they're kind of like a stick chair Windsor sort of combo thing that I really like. I think they sell plans for those. It's one of those things that, I'm going to eventually pick up some of their plans because unique chairs.
Yes. And then the chair makers from Australia, David Duyard and
Byrne.
Oh, you got Glenn
Chandler. Glenn Rundell.
Byrne Chandler.
I love Byrne's.
Glenn Rundell. And
His Crinoline chair is very interesting to me. I bought the plans for that. I hope to build one of those someday.
Cool.
Instagram's really great for that. It's really cool to just see pictures and keep in touch with people doing cool stuff.
That is one of the good things. And speaking of good things about the internet, where can folks find you on the internet should they wish to?
My company is benchcrafted.com. That's woodworking vices and workbenches and tools. And then my personal stuff is Jameel Abraham at Jameel Abraham on Instagram. And that's mostly furniture stuff, mostly woodworking. So
excellent. Fantastic. So Brian, where can folks find you?
Instagram is where you can find me, and it's Obst Woodworks, and Obst is just OBST. Sean, how about you? I'm sorry, Kyle, how about you?
You can find Sean at Sean 78 on most social medias, you can find me at Barton.Kyle or BB Custom Tools, bbcustomtools.com, or on YouTube under BB Custom Tools or Kyle Barton. Sean, what about yourself?
As previously stated, I'm SeanW78 on most social medias.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.